interrupt this broadcast to bring you this important bulletin from the United Press. Flash, Washington.
We interrupt our program to bring you a special broadcast. The German news agency...
We interrupt this program to bring you a news bulletin from Washington. The White House has just announced...
Here is a news bulletin. Shots have reportedly been fired.
Here's another late development, and this news keeps coming in.
This is an NBC News hotline report.
Special report. Verdict sparks violence. National guard.
First time, we are bringing you the full story of what happened. We are giving you all the evidence, based only on the secret testimony of the miserable souls who survived this terrifying ordeal. The incidents, the places. My friend, we cannot keep this a secret any longer. Can your heart stand the shocking facts of the true story of Joshua P. Warren?
From the land of the sky and to high strangers around the globe, this is Speaking of Strange with Joshua P. Warren.
First time ever, $5 million inventory has to go during the $5 million event.
And the world is becoming more and more insane every day. Welcome to the program that gives you breaking news and insight regarding the paranormal and downright weird, where the unusual becomes usual. And we don't just discuss it, we go in the field to investigate. Here's one from Brazil. This is according to the BBC. In Brazil, a cat was arrested for breaking into a prison. That's right, the house cat broke into a prison with a variety of items attached to its body, including drill bits, files, a mobile phone and charger, plus earphones. There were about 263 prisoners inside, I'm sure all of them cat lovers. And they say the white cat was apprehended around the main prison gate, and the cat has now been detained in a local animal center. A spokesperson for the prison said, quote, "It's tough to find out who's responsible for the action, as the cat does not speak," end quote. Well, who knows? How weird. Is that similar to a cat burglar? Somebody had to say it.
I was going
to
say it.
Hey, thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, author of books like Haunted Asheville, How to Hunt Ghosts, and The Secret Wisdom of Kukulcan. I'm founder and president of Lemur Paranormal Investigations. My producer and engineer is Mr. Hardwood Forrest Connor. Good evening, Forrest.
Good evening, Joshua. How are you tonight?
I'm feeling great. You know, tonight is it's a special night, and I mentioned this to you, of course, earlier. I'm not going to make too big of a deal out of it. Recently, George Norrie of Coast to Coast AM celebrated his 10-year anniversary of doing Coast. And I actually came on the show and wished him congratulations. A lot of people did. Well, as it turns out, tonight is also our 10-year anniversary here on Speaking of Strange. Can you believe that? 10 years.
10 years.
Unless I've screwed up and I've skipped a year somewhere, it's at least 9. But we'll say 10. 10's long enough. But the funny thing is, you know how it's like when you become an adult, you don't really feel like celebrating your birthday anymore?
Right.
I think after 10 years, we've had enough anniversary parties for ourselves. We don't need to pat ourselves and stroke ourselves on the head anymore.
We'll celebrate at 50.
Okay, that sounds good. And you were there an integral part of this program from the very beginning, Forrest.
Yes, sir.
You know, this show, I don't think, would be on the air if it weren't for you. You believed in the show. You acted as a liaison for all the players involved. And it's great that now everything's come full circle. And
that's been a, to borrow a quote, it's been a strange ride.
It certainly has.
Years.
And for the past few years, things have been even weirder. Since we've had investigator Shelley Wright of Wright's Coin Shop around, how are you doing this evening, Shelley Wright?
Doing great. Recovering from things. From
13th night?
Yes.
We had our big 13th night party. I feel so sorry for all the people listening who didn't make it.
Yeah, because it was killer.
It was great. The atmosphere was wonderful. I mean, the weather was nice all day. The decor inside the mansion was perfect. We had all kinds of fortune tellers and talented people. Bill Forsten was there dressed as a Mongolian. In fact, Bill gave us a little treat that I'm going to share later on in the show for somebody out there, a listener, a lucky listener. Of course, I performed my very first theremin concert.
And you did very well.
Yes,
well,
you did.
I think it went okay. You know, it's good to have people a little liquored up first.
I recognize the songs.
Well, you know, one thing that I realized was as soon as I got there, we set everything up, I realized, man, the table that I have this thing sitting on is made out of metal.
Oh.
And the theremin is a very sensitive electrical device. And so it really did throw off all my playing a little bit all night. And I'm sure I could have dragged a wooden table in. But I figured I'd give it a shot. And so it can be done, but it does distort some of the distances that I was used to hit certain notes. Theremin is kind of like a capacitor, and you have each of the electrodes exposed, for those of you who are engineers out there. So there's this standing field of potential between the two plates, and you're moving your hands around and kind of distorting that field, and that's how you get the sound. So, yeah, if you have a metal table, in fact, it wouldn't work at all sitting directly on the metal table. It was shorting it out somehow. So I had to find something non-conductive to elevate it a little bit, and Tad McDivitt comes over with a cardboard Ouija board box. And I thought, hey, you know, this is perfect. Of all things, let's elevate the theremin on a Ouija board box. So, yeah, things got stranger and stranger, but everybody seemed to have a fantastic time. And, people also continued having paranormal experiences there, crawling into the tunnels, exploring all the different levels of the Grove House there. And that was your first time really going through the whole Grove House, right, Forrest?
It was.
Yeah. I know you'd been in the basement at one point in the past, or the lower level.
I have.
But, yeah, very cool place. And we have, you know, a great admiration for Jeff Davis and all, the whole staff there, Pops and all the guys, for opening the place up for these kinds of events. Well, my goodness, we have so much to talk about tonight. Especially hour number two, I'm going to get into some really weird stuff about my paratemporal loop hypothesis. It's quite a mouthful, but a new book has come out which features my hypothesis, and so I'm going to tell you a little bit about that book. But you know, before we start getting too serious here, I started off the program tonight with this story about this cat, you know, that has broken into a prison in Brazil. And we're always interested when we see these patterns of weird animal behavior, weird animal flaps. Well, my wife, Lauren, is a huge animal person. All she does all the time is just watch animal videos and, you know, go to the zoo and that kind of thing. And so the other night, she's laughing hysterically, and she said, "You have to see this video." And she showed me a video of something that was just so stupid. I said, you know, we have to play the audio of this on Speaking of Strange. This is, I don't know where this is from, actually. Does it say, Forrest, what country this goat is in?
No.
It's chicken goat. It's a goat that was raised with chickens. And apparently there were no other goats around. So this goat has learned to communicate with people as if the goat were a chicken. And I swear this video appears to be 100% authentic.
And like I say, it's just so ridiculous. It lasts about a minute. We're just going to play audio for you of this goat that was raised with chickens. Here is Chicken Goat.
מה קורה?
He kind of sticks his tongue out a little bit.
Yeah, בריאות. איך קוראים לך?
מה קוראים לך?
It's ridiculous. Probably the dumbest thing I've ever seen.
מה קוראים לך?
And it kind of sticks its tongue out every time it goes,
what is it? What is it?
I'm sorry. We had to subject everybody to that. Isn't that ridiculous, Shelley Wright?
It's pretty ridiculous.
Chicken goat.
Chicken goat.
So, how far can this go? You know, what other creatures can you just stick a goat with and watch it imitate as it grows up? I'm sure people will begin to experiment now. People will want to create their own chicken goats. Okay. Weird stuff. It's 2013. We've crossed over. I've always talked about how that the whole big deal behind December 21st, 2012 was not that the world was going to end, but that we were actually going to cross a baseline. We were going to shift over into an inverse bizarro world in which paranormal stuff and weirdness starts to become much more prevalent. And I saw this story that we're going to get into after the break, which may actually apply directly to this. Because, again, it's a little bit on the scientific side, but most people have heard of the term absolute zero, which in science is the theoretical lowest possible temperature. This is supposed to be the temperature at which motion stops, basically. Right.
Negative 277 degrees Fahrenheit.
Negative 273.15 on Kelvin. Or no, it's zero on Kelvin and negative 273.15 on Celsius and then negative 459.67 on Fahrenheit.
Okay.
Yeah. All these confusing, you know, numbers. But scientists now are claiming, and this was published by Nature, that they have attained now temperatures below absolute zero. And when this happens, something very odd occurs. So I'll explain more about what happens when you go below absolute zero. This is kind of like people always believing that you couldn't go faster than the speed of light. And yet they have done that now. They have gone faster than the speed of light. This is another barrier that's been broken. It's very weird how this could apply to all the other strangeness that we have in store for the year 2013 and beyond. We'll dig into that and a lot more. It's the program where the unusual becomes usual, where we dig into the amazing, the remarkable, the extraordinary, and the downright weird. It's called Speaking of Strange. I'm Joshua P. Warren. We'll be right back.
My heart is so pure.
It's the program where the unusual becomes usual. We call it Speaking of Strange. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren. Now envision this. Envision you're looking at an oscilloscope. And right through the middle, horizontally, is a baseline. And above the baseline, you have a sine wave. And it's large on one side, and it's breaking down and breaking down and breaking down, and then it terminates right in the middle of the baseline. Now, if you're standing at the baseline, and you're looking at this, you might say, oh, this huge wave has ended, everything's over. But if you step back and look at the big picture, you'll see that that wave continues past the baseline, and then it gets from smaller to larger and larger and larger again, and does the exact opposite thing on the bottom of the baseline that it did coming down on the top of the baseline. So, again, if you're looking from the position of the baseline, you can say, oh, a huge thing has ended, or you can say a huge thing is beginning, right? So, we look at the time wave as being the end of one frequency shift and the beginning of another. Now, keep that model in your head as we look at this story from nature about absolute zero being reached. Now, again, absolute zero has been thought for hundreds of years to be the lowest temperature. That's the point at which all motion stops. There's nothing below this. But the scientists have now gone beyond that. Now, that may not make sense at first, but here's how they describe it. They say that, quote, it's like walking through a valley and then instantly finding yourself on a mountain peak, end quote. Now, ultimately what they've done here is, and this is very complicated, it's very technical, so I'm going to do my best here to describe it. I don't even understand all of this myself. But it says, this scientist here, named Schneider, and where is he? He's working with the, I think he's in Germany. Says, Schneider and his colleagues reached sub-absolute zero temperatures with an ultra-cold quantum gas made up of potassium ions. Using lasers and magnetic fields, they kept the individual atoms in a lattice arrangement. Now, at positive temperatures, the atoms repel, making this whole thing unstable. Making the whole thing stable. The team then quickly adjusted the magnetic fields, causing the atoms to attract rather than repel each other. And they say, quote, this suddenly shifts the atoms from their most stable, lowest energy state to the highest possible energy state before they can react, end quote. So at positive temperatures, this kind of a reversal would be unstable and the atoms would collapse inward. But the team adjusted the trapping laser field to make it favorable energetically for the atoms to stay in their position. And they say the result marks the gas's transition from just above absolute zero to a few billionths of a Kelvin below absolute zero, at which point it begins to heat up with an incredible amount of energy. So, basically, it gets it goes from a very hot state in the positive temperatures to colder, 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 till absolutely cold. But once you cross that threshold, there's a huge pool of heat that starts over again.
That's a game changer.
Yeah. The whole universe now, apparently, has this other layer of potential unimaginable heat energy just sitting there somewhere in the background. And even though humans are just now figuring out how to do this in the laboratory, what is happening throughout the universe? And if you, again, you overlay this with the model that I gave you of how we have been talking about the time wave zero timeline, it's like the same design here is expressed with temperature in general. Now, you might ask yourself, why is this so important? It's important because in order for us to become a more efficient energy-using society, we have got to figure out how to be able to extract energy directly from the ether, for lack of a better word, the zero point, right? And that's the reason that we've been held back when it comes to things like humans understanding UFO technology. If you have a little model of a UFO, of a flying saucer, it's easy to understand its dynamics and make it fly around and zip around and do all these things that flying saucers do if it's tethered to a big power supply. Cutting the power supply, however, that's the problem, because how do you get a heavy power supply onto something that's lightweight enough to react to fields like these little flying saucer models do? Nobody's figured that out. But if these saucers don't have to carry a power supply, but literally tap into potential energy fields that are just sitting there all around in the multidimensional ether, then they are able to be powered by what is directly all around them. So in a way, it's kind of like if you're sitting on one side of a dam, there's all this water power there, but it's not doing anything for you. You punch a hole in the dam, now you have this high-powered stream of water shooting out, and that's kinetic energy that you can use to do whatever you want. You can turn a wheel, generate power, you can propel things. So it's almost like the universe is this huge, big dam of energy sitting there. And if we can figure out how to punch a hole in it, then we can access that power directly without having to carry all of it with us, like we have to do with a big, heavy battery. Now, if we learn more and more about how to punch those holes, whether that means lowering to absolute zero and below or whatever, which, by the way, you know, when you get that cold, there are lots of levitation effects that take place with superconductivity as well. If we figure that out, then we might be able to power everything on this planet in perfect harmony with Mother Nature. One of the big challenges, however, would be once you poke a hole in the dam, how do you control what's flowing out of it? Maybe we would just cause some, you know, rip in the space-time continuum and too much energy would come flooding through and we'd destroy ourselves. When the guys were working on the atom bombs, they were also concerned about issues like that. Up until the first moment that an atomic bomb was detonated, there were some very real concerns among the scientists that when they set this thing off, it might catch the atmosphere on fire and burn up the entire planet. And there are a lot of reasons to believe, given what they knew at that time, that that was plausible, that this could happen.
Well, I mean, the same concerns were brought up with the super collider.
Right.
So, I mean, but who knows?
Well, you know, I think that if we believe that these aliens are beings that are advanced enough to have figured this one out, they mastered it maybe a million years ago, then that is some reason to think that you don't have to destroy yourself, that it can be done in a controlled manner. But that doesn't mean the potential is not there. And especially when you have crazy people like we have on our planet here who are reckless with just even nuclear power. You have these evil terrorists and whatnot. But all this is fascinating because I think that part of this transition is about trying to get closer to what we have talked about before, that type 1 civilization. A civilization that is able to utilize all the resources on their planet harmoniously and cleanly. And then, of course, from there, if you learn to do the same thing with all the resources in your solar system, that's a type 2 civilization. And then if you branch out to all the resources in your galaxy, that's a type 3, et cetera, et cetera. We're not even a type 1, but we may be getting closer to a type 1, technologically at least, if not politically, technologically, if we understand how to shift through to go to what we thought was the bottom of the valley and realize, no, that we're standing on another mountain peak. We're going to take a break. I hope all that kind of made sense. When we come back, I'll tell you how this whole concept of a type 1 civilization may apply directly to your life, saving you money and making your world a much easier, more peaceful place. I'm Joshua P. Warren, It's the Dark... Oh, no, I'm not yet. Not yet. I'm getting... It's the Speaking of Strange show. Dark 30 comes up later on. We're not there yet. We'll be right back.
Is real. Fatal attraction is holding me fast. How can I escape this irresistible grasp? Can't keep my eyes.
Joshua P. Warren, coming up next hour. It's going to be what we sometimes call a mind-gasm on this program. We're going to go really deep down the rabbit hole. It's going to be too much for some of you. It's going to be, your brain is going to hurt too bad. Shelley Wright, are you concerned about this?
Nah.
You know a little bit about my paratemporal loop hypothesis.
Yes. Of course I do.
I want to show you something, Shelley. Here I have in my hand a little rectangular black device. It kind of looks like a camera, or it's the size of like a large cell phone or something, right? It weighs about, I don't know, maybe a pound. Here on the top it has a solar panel, and here on the side it's got a hand crank. Okay? It's got a flashlight on the end, LED flashlight. That's bright, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's got a weather radio. It's got an AM and FM radio. And right here, it has a port to charge your cell phone, as well as a headphone out jack. It's got a little antenna here on the top. It's weatherproof. It's got a nice rubber covering. It's got a hand strap.
Ooh, how much you want for it?
Isn't that cool?
I like it.
The retail on that thing is about $30.
Uh-huh.
And can you imagine how much relief it could bring to people in times of disaster when you hand out hundreds or thousands of those things to people in need?
This would be priceless. This is amazing.
And see, that is a clean energy device. It's independent. It allows you to communicate with your cell phone. It allows you to hear what's going on in the world. You've got the light there. You don't need any batteries for it. That is an example of the kind of thing that I am creating the Sunshine Simple Foundation for. The Sunshine Simple Foundation is a nonprofit foundation that is going to go to places or team up with people who are going to places when disasters strike. We're going to hand out devices like those, solar and hand crank cell phone chargers, combo hand crank solar AM FM and weather radio flashlight cell chargers. We're going to hand out little inverters for car cigarette lighters that will allow you to power household items through your car cigarette lighter up to 100 watts, various warmth and survival kits, as well as full-scale 1800 watt Sunshine Simple portable generators just for free. Okay. And to me, it's great to do this. It's good karma. And we're not only going to give those out to people in times of disaster. The rest of the year, we're going to be helping people who are needy, educating them, giving these to them, helping them understand these alternative sources of power, how easy and accessible it is. And the Sunshine Simple Nonprofit Foundation is devoted to that. You know, we have sold Sunshine Simple devices for a while, and now this 501c3 nonprofit is going to exist solely to give things away, as many as possible. I talked to my lawyers. To actually set up the 501c3 costs $6,000. And that includes all the government fees, and there are a lot of them. And you can look this up for yourself and see that that's about right for setting up a good nonprofit with tax-deductible nonprofit with federal and state. So if you would like to contribute to raising the $6,000, go to sunshinesimple.com. And you will see a whole page on the nonprofit. You'll see a video from me there talking about it. Our mission statement is to deliver solar generators and other independent energy sources and technologies to people in times of crisis and need. The primary areas of relief will be powering of medical equipment and pumps, charging of cell phones, maintaining refrigeration, powering sterilization and cooking devices, powering computers and modems, providing safe lighting, providing radios, survival blankets, water purification tablets, et cetera, all given either directly to needy citizens from delivery trucks or via distribution by other relief groups. So you'll see all these pictures of different devices that we're going to give away. And there are a variety of ways that you can donate to help us raise $6,000. If you can do PayPal, you can email me. You can also go to a GoFundMe. If you do GoFundMe, however, there we're asking for $7,200 to compensate for the charges and fees to use their website, to use their forum. But I want to thank publicly here our first donator, Ryan Felice. He says, best of luck with your endeavor. He was our very first donator. He donated $10. And see, that's all it takes right there, $10 to help us get closer to this goal. So, again, go to sunshinesimple.com, and trust me, there is no profit being made in this. Every penny is going to what I say it's going to. Your donation will help real people in real need with physical technological solutions. This is not some paperwork scam where we're going to make people apply for this and that. We're going to go to these places, and we're going to say, here. I don't know who you are. I don't know where you live, but you here, take this. That, you know, we bought this for you. Because if this thing that I just showed you, Shelley, if it costs $30 if you buy one of them, what can you get it for if you buy 100 of them or 1,000 of them, right?
True.
We could probably get them for less than $10. And that's the power that the nonprofit will give us. A big war chest there we can use to go out and buy these in bulk and just hand them out to as many people as possible. And, of course, each one will have a little tag or label that says provided by the Sunshine Simple Nonprofit Foundation. When you're back on your feet, you know, remember us, that we helped you. So sunshinesimple.com. If we do this, I think that not only is it going to be good karma, but it's going to help in our own little way take humankind closer to that type 1 civilization I'm talking about. Now, Bill Fortune, of course, is a huge proponent of people being self-reliant and independent with their energy needs, and also being protected against how fragile some of the instrumentation is, open to EMP damage and that kind of thing. Well, Dr. Bill, he came to 13th Night, and again, dressed up in his Mongolian garb, telling stories, having a great time. He even played the theremin for the first time in his life. He sat down, he got some theremin lessons. So Bill Fortune was kind enough, and I didn't even ask him to do this, but he brought a brand new hardback copy of his novel, his best-selling novel, 1 Second After. and he signed it. It says right there, best wishes, William R. Forstchen. And he told me that I can take this book and auction it off to raise money for the Sunshine Simple Nonprofit Foundation. And I figured so many people loved the interview that I did with Dr. Forstchen a month or two ago. You remember, Shelley? Mm-hmm. That this will be the great forum here for us to use to do kind of a silent auction. So if you are listening to this program and you would like this autographed, brand-new hardback copy of 1 Second After that Bill Forstchen gave to me, over the next week, I want you to email me. You'll find my email address there on the nonprofit page. It's at the bottom. It's shadowboxent@gmail.com, because my company is called Shadowbox Enterprises. shadowboxent@gmail.com. Email me and tell me what your bid is. And next Saturday on the show, I will announce who has the highest bid and who gets the book. And 100% of that money goes to the Sunshine Simple Nonprofit Foundation Formation.
Actually, we've not talked about this, but Josh, I'll start the bidding off at $50.
Oh, will you?
Yes,
wow,
I will.
Okay. How do you like that, folks? We are already at $50 to get the auction started. You want to jump in here, Shelley? 51?
51, yes.
Okay, so $50 is the starting price. Next Saturday,
right here, you see it, I'm holding up right.
He's got $50 in his hands. I could just take this $50 right now and say, hey, a bird in a bag's worth two in the bush, but I don't want to do that to the listeners, because I know we have huge Bill Forstchen fans out there. And even if you bought this thing somewhere else, it's nice to know it was in our hands. You have this right here in our hands. Forrest has asked me if I would sign this as well. I don't think that would be the right thing. If you want me to, I'll do it, but I hate to mar Bill Forstchen's work with my name. I didn't write this book. But here's what I will do. I'll throw in an autographed copy of one of my books as well. How about that?
That works.
All right, $50 we're starting off with. Email me there, and it'll be a big success, I'm sure, all for a good cause. We're going to take a break. And when we come back from the break, listen to this story. We're going to just go ahead and get kicked off with the Florida stuff tonight, because I have a stack of Floridian stuff. Man proclaims himself Jesus and then turns into a flesh-eating zombie. Yeah. Huh. I don't know. I saw there was this little lull in Florida stories for like a week or two, and I was like, oh, this isn't good. Something is building up here. Something is about to blossom. And yes, Florida has just gone completely insane.
You've got your whole dam of energy of Florida stories right here, like you were talking about earlier.
That's right. The dam is broken. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You are listening to Speaking of Strange.
Same as my daddy and his daddy before. You hardly ever saw granddaddy down here. You only come a ten about.
Minutes of hour number one on tonight's Speaking of Strange. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren. Next hour, we're going to dig deep into the paratemporal loop hypothesis, a dizzying idea. And it's because that, oddly enough, recently, Tim Beckley, our friend Tim Beckley, he contacted me and he said, hey, you're in a book that we just published. What's your address again? I want to send you a copy. And so I get this copy of this book in the mail, and it's called Plans for Time Machines That Really Work. How to Move Through Time and Space. It's like, wow, that's kind of cool. I'm in a book called Plans for Time Machines That Really Work. Like, I know all about that. But it turns out that our friend Nick Redfern wrote a great piece in here and quoted me at length about some of my theories, and I'll dig into that because I think it's time. It's time to touch on those once again. Things are getting strange as we knew they would. We knew that things were going to heat up around December 21st, but now we're just on the other side, the bizarro land. And it's stranger than ever in Florida. That's our Florida bell. You're going to hear it a lot tonight. I'm going to keep it right here next to me and just bang it all night long. Apparently in Florida here, and I'm not sure what city this happened in, Charlotte County, wherever that is, police arrived on the scene to find an 18-year-old man in the middle of the street wearing only his underwear and socks, jumping up and down, screaming, yelling, and waving his arms. When they asked him, "What are you doing?" he yelled that he was Jesus and that everyone was coming to get him. When deputies approached the suspect, he ran toward the officer, flailing his arms, and so the officer tased him. But the tasing did not stop him, because moments later, the would-be Jesus rushed at the cop again, and this time he lunged and bit deeply into the police officer's arm, attempting to tear the flesh away. The officer was able to get him off, but the guy then lunged right back and sunk his teeth into the officer's leg. At that point, they tased him an additional time, but the suspect managed to keep his choppers gripped on the officer's leg. Despite being tased, they could not get him to release. So they're beating and tasing and beating and tasing. They finally were able to tear him away from the officer's leg. They transported him to the Peace River Regional Medical Center, and his violent outbursts continued all night long. The guy, of course, has been charged with all kinds of things. Battery on a law enforcement officer, resisting arrest, violence and disorderly, this and that and the other. The deputy has been treated for his bite wound and released. So it's not even dark 30 hour yet, and we're already talking about stories about guys stripping down practically naked and attacking people like that. Before we wrap up this hour, here's a story about William Shatner. You know, recently I went to my personal website, joshuapwarren.com, and updated it with some samples of TV work that I've done over the years, and with the help of C. Eric Scott. And there is a, do you know that William Shatner actually talked about me on a national TV program, Forrest Connor?
Really?
Yeah. Maybe we can play the audio at some point, but there was a program that aired in Canada called Weird or What. Now, they air a version of that in the States without William Shatner, but he hosts, very heavily hosts, the Canadian version. And I was on a version of the Canadian show, and William Shatner, he starts talking, he specifically says, Joshua P. Warren. And I was like, wow, Captain Kirk said my name. That's some kind of an achievement in life.
What could it mean?
Yes. He's a ghost hunter of some kind with some interesting theories. we actually should play that audio when we come back. But anyway, here's a story about William Shatner. Apparently, William Shatner has sent a tweet to space, and he got a response. He sent a tweet to Commander Chris Hadfield of the Canadian Space Agency, who is currently serving as the International Space Station's flight engineer for Expedition 34. And it says, Hadfield not only responded to Shatner, but addressed him as captain. And in the Twitter exchange here, William Shatner says to Commander Hadfield, "Are you tweeting from space?" And the astronaut responded, "Yes, standard orbit, Captain, and we're detecting signs of life on the surface." And let's see, and then he also wrote, the astronaut wrote, "The last time William Shatner and I met was in another dimension, 2D. I'm not sure what that means. But anyway, you know, Mobius has been talking about an experiment that we need to do on our radio show with some of the Star Trek cast. I won't get into it now. It might spoil the surprise. But Mobius has actually been talking recently with Leonard Nimoy. Isn't that something?
Really?
Yeah. So I think we might be able to get Nimoy involved in this experiment. Again, Shatner has said my name, so we're best buds now. Maybe we'll have a little surprise to announce soon. But for now, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about, yes, mind-boggling things, the paratemporal loop hypothesis. I'm Joshua P. Warren. It's Speaking of Strange.
Very superstitious, writings on the wall.
Traveling here.